Hi, and welcome to another episode of Economist Corner, a CETA podcast where leading thinkers break down the latest news and policy updates. I'm Jared Ball, Chief Economist of the Committee for Economic Development of Australia. Yesterday, the West Australian Government released its 2021-22 state budget, unveiling a massive $5.6 billion surplus. Some of the big ticket items in the budget include an $875 million social housing package and $1.9 billion in extra healthcare funding. But will the measures announced set Western Australia up for long-term success? With me to discuss this is CETA's Perth-based senior economist, Cassandra Windsor. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi, Jared. Good to be talking with you today.
Well, and, you know, it's Friday afternoon. I know you had a busy day yesterday in the lockup and all of the different media obligations after that. So, you know, especially appreciative of you joining the pod at this time. Let's start with, I mentioned the large surplus, which is obviously, you know, a bit of a standout amongst governments at the moment. Can you just take us through what the kind of macro features of this budget were in terms of where the budget balance is, what's sort of driving that, and also some of the economic assumptions?
Sure. Large is probably understating it. It's an enormous surplus. So we had $5.6 billion the last financial year, and we've got more to come. So the forecast for this financial year is a $2.8 billion surplus, and expecting surpluses over the rest of the forward estimates as well. Not quite so big, but still a really healthy budget position. So great on the revenue side. It's mainly been driven by iron ore revenue. So the iron ore price, particularly last year, was very, very high. It was much higher than expected. It's fallen back a bit now, but it still remains above average. So the WA Treasury is using for this current financial year a forecast of $120 a ton for iron ore, which is actually still below where the current price is. For the outer years, they don't forecast. They use the long run average, which is a pretty kind of prudent measure to take, and that's based off an iron ore price of just $66 a ton. So the budget position is looking pretty healthy, even if we do see some falls in iron ore. The other thing that's really boosted the budget position this year has been there's been a lot of domestic spending in WA, so a lot of people spending on interstate tourism, spending on housing, renovations, and lots of sales of motor vehicles as well. We've also got the GST. So because there were some changes to how GST was distributed in 2018, WA now gets a minimum of 70 cents in the dollar back for GST that has been generated in the state. Without these changes, we wouldn't have got nearly as much money as we would have currently. So that all those things have combined to really give us this absolutely enormous budget surplus. We've also got really rosy economic outlook. So we've had gross net product expecting about 3.5% this year. State final demand also very strong. Unemployment rate forecast to fall and stay around 4.5% over the forward estimates. So everything is looking fairly good for WA, although they do drop off a little bit towards the end of that four-year forward estimates period.
All right, so a very strong position, enviable, no doubt, amongst jurisdictions. What has this translated into in terms of, the other way that we judge budgets, which is just the mix of measures and the nature of those to really boost the long-term capacity of the economy?
So despite the fact we've got this massive surplus, and also the McGowan government over here has a massive political majority, it's really a very safe and cautious budget. So we're not seeing a lot in there in terms of long-term policy reform. So I would love to see something around stamp duty or even payroll tax. And the spending measures that have been announced, so we had that $1.9 billion on health and $875 million on social housing, they're fantastic, but they're more reactions to short-term challenges that we've had over here. So the health system, despite the fact we've got no COVID in WA at the moment, has really been under a lot of pressure, and that $1.9 billion is to relieve some of that. Similar with the social housing. So social housing dwellings have fallen over the last couple of years, and we're now having issues around homelessness and a growing social housing waitlist. So it's great to see those investments. They are sorely needed, but it's really important that they're not kind of one-off investments and then we kind of just let it slide. We saw that around the GFC. We saw some big investments in social housing with money coming both from federal and from state governments. And then after that, we just kind of left it for 10 years and didn't do much. So there is a bit of a concern that that might be the same thing here, that we'll have this one-off spending to deal with a short-term challenge. But we may not see that long-term commitment to really improving some of that social infrastructure and setting WA up to go through all these cycles. WA is a very cyclical economy. Just a couple of years ago, we were in a downturn. We're now back to, these figures are similar to what we were talking about during the last resources boom, but it will come off again. So there really needs to be much more long-term planning and longer-term strategic infrastructure investment over in WA.
All right, so let's dig into a few of these areas. Obviously, skill shortages are in the headlines in WA at the moment, and the Premier had a skills summit to try and work through some of these issues. What's the budget doing for skills, and what else do we need to see in future to address this challenge?
So there are some measures in the budget to address skills, but I think it's a little bit underdone. So there is some money for TAFE, for apprentices and traineeships, about $120 million. It's probably not enough. Some of these skill shortages are because of the border closures, but some of them were actually inevitable. So we trained very few apprentices and trainees during the recent downturn. And it's not that surprising that when things have picked up, we haven't had people there to take on some of these jobs. So again, would like to see, not just some money thrown at the short-term problem, something like training and development, you really can't do just in the short term because you need to be planning and training people no matter what the kind of cyclical, what stage of the cycle you're in, but actually to really plan that for the longer term. So would have liked to see more measures addressing skills, so more money on the apprentices and trainees, particularly in areas like aged care. So CEDA's talked a lot about aged care recently, where we're seeing some really concerning skill shortages there, and similar areas such as disability care and health as well. We also need something in the short term to get some people in these critical industries into WA despite the border closures. There are some measures. I think there's an advertising campaign to convince people from other states to move to WA and take up some jobs at the moment. A little bit tricky when we do keep shutting our borders to most of the country. So I'm not sure that's going to have much of an impact. But so say areas like aged care, healthcare, disability, sectors of agriculture as well. We really need some measures to get people into these critical roles. So that will provide benefits to the community and also help out the general economy as well. So if we don't get people in, we might not realise some of the potential that the WA economy has at the moment.
So a big positive in this budget is the investment in social housing, and something that we're starting to see across various state governments at this time and really addressing a long-term backlog. What's your assessment of that? That package looks pretty big in a historical sense. Is this going to be enough? And I guess more broadly, are there measures that states governments should be thinking about in terms of affordable housing at the moment, because it's certainly a market that has not slowed down despite the COVID downturn.
Yeah, so the social housing money is fantastic. It's sorely needed. It will increase social housing dwellings by about 3,300 over the next few years. That's great. It is probably a little bit too late, so would have liked to have seen it a couple of years ago, and that's why we are having some issues with homelessness and wait lists at the moment. But that being said, it's good to have. The issue does come then into the affordable housing space. So social housing is really that very low income, so that people, really in no way can afford to rent or buy in the private market. One interesting thing in the detail of the $875 million package is some of that is actually moving dwellings from the state government's shared equity program, which is where the WA state government owns a proportion of people's dwellings, and so they're paying a lower cost for them, moving some dwellings from that shared equity, which is in the affordable housing space, into the social housing space. So that there's really not a lot of support there in that affordable housing. So people who are probably earning a moderate income, but are really struggling to either rent in the private market, and rents have gone up considerably in WA in the last year, or to buy a dwelling in the private market. The other issue that we're seeing in housing is the National Rental Affordability Scheme is coming off soon. That scheme was a joint scheme between the state and federal governments, and there's nothing to replace that. So we didn't see anything in the federal government to replace it, and we haven't seen anything in the state budget to replace it either. That is a concern. There's a considerable number of people that are in NRAS properties that pay a discount on market rent. And there's nothing for them to necessarily go to when that scheme comes off. And it's also in a period where rents are rising. So we need to address housing throughout what we call the housing continuum. So we can't just look at social housing. We need to look at that affordable housing as well to ensure that we have a really well-functioning housing market and that everyone has the kind of shelter that meets their needs.
So a central focus for state governments at the moment is obviously the capacity of their health systems to deal with, I guess you could say, business as usual and obviously surge capacity around the sort of ongoing risk and threats around COVID. This budget obviously makes a major injection into health funding. Where's the money going, and are there any kind of gaps in that package?
Yeah, so we've got $1.9 billion additional spending on health. It's a good amount. It's going to both physical health and mental health, which is fantastic. It's mainly around opening more beds in hospitals, and that's through increasing staffing numbers, so getting more doctors and nurses on. That is good, but it's going to be a difficult implementation because we don't have these particular doctors, but also nurses readily available. So there will need to be, they can get some exemptions to get into the state, but it will still be difficult. So given the skill shortages we're having, the implementation of that package is going to be tricky. Again, it's good that we've seen this one-off spend, but we do need a bit more planning for the future. So towards the end of the estimates in the budget, it looks like population growth is starting to pick up. We really need to plan for when that picks up and not just react to the current challenges the health system is having. So there doesn't seem to be any planning for a new hospital, a new general hospital. So there is a new women's hospital that was announced in a previous budget, but that is really just replacing an old one that's in very poor condition. So we would like to see at least what the plans are for meeting that population growth and making sure that we have the health system and the capacity to meet the needs of a growing population.
Well, it's a good point. And obviously, WA had a bit of a spike in terms of population growth at the start of the pandemic with people returning home. But more broadly, we may see some further kind of growth based on the fact that COVID has been, so successfully kept out of the state to date. The other issue, of course, we can't talk about this at the moment without talking about economic diversification, which is a seems to be back in the headlines a little bit, and certainly part of CEDA's upcoming events program in WA. Some really good discussions coming up with the government on that. What's the budget got in it around sort of incentivizing and supporting a more diverse WA economy?
So there is a little bit in this budget around economic diversification, and the government does talk about it, but I don't think there's anywhere near enough. So we've got $100 million investment attraction and new industries fund. There's some money in there for the hydrogen industry. But the real concern in WA is the economy is actually getting less diverse over here, not more. During the downturn, we did talk about maybe trying to expand our international education or tourism. That never really happened and it probably put us in a reasonable position when COVID hit. But we have seen that services exports fell by 38% last year and forecast to fall by 12% this year. So we've actually ended up with an economy that is more and more dominated by mining, and there's some real concerns there. So would have really liked to seen in this budget more on that economic diversification and some support for those industries that are really doing it tough due to COVID. So we talk a lot about everything's fantastic over here, but there are some industries that haven't had much support and are really struggling. So international education is probably one of the big ones that comes to mind. Tourism, so while regional tourism has been kind of going gangbusters over here, the CBD has really struggled. So hotels are pretty empty, and some of that higher end tourism that Australians don't generally but international tourists would, and also a little bit more support for the arts. So despite the fact things are open in WA, there has still been just huge amounts of uncertainty and continually changing restrictions that have made things really difficult there. There's very little in the budget for those sectors. And the concern is that if we don't support these sectors now, once borders reopen, it's going to be really difficult for them to bounce back. It would be great to see a bit more support for them. Tide them over, get them ready for when borders do reopen, and then really throw things at those sectors to improve the diversification of the state.
Well, Cass, I'm going to let you go on that note, have some post-budget, I won't say relaxation, because obviously there's lots more research and work to do, but just to reflect on the budget and enjoy your weekend in Perth. Thank you. That was Cassandra Windsor, CETA's Perth-based senior economist. And if you want to hear more CETA podcasts, you can subscribe using your favorite podcasting app. Thanks for listening.